You're listening to the Nick Smith Podcast.
Real life, no myth.
Where we talk about myths and misunderstandings
surrounding life, race, faith, and culture.
If you'd like to support the Nick Smith Podcast, rate us on iTunes.
Or you can give through our Patreon.
And don't forget to share this on social media so that all of your friends can know what you're listening to.
We are your hosts, Nick Smith
and Kylie Jo Smith, and today's episode is called
Yes, Our Son Has Autism.
No, you don't need to apologize.
All right, so today's episode is very close to home, literally our home, because our son lives here in our home. But Kylie Jo, do you want to give a little background as to why we decided to share this now?
Yeah. So like you said, this is it's close to home. And for many in our culture, it's a sensitive subject. There's a lot of information and misinformation and things that we have to process about this. There's a lot of hashtags. There's just a lot of stuff out there that we can get hung up on, with the medical perspective and the psychological perspective and the social perspective. And looking at all of that, having walked through this for a little bit, now we certainly aren't as entrenched as some of our friends with older kids, but we want to give our perspective from our worldview to anyone that wants to hear it. Yes. So our son was actually diagnosed with autism last April. Mm-hmm. And while we were already prepared for kind of receiving that official diagnosis on paper, we realized there's a lot of challenging situations that we've faced that as parents or caretakers or educators of children on the spectrum, we don't always know how to navigate those things. And it can feel, it's kind of like when we encounter someone with a disability, but it's almost like, well, do I acknowledge the disability or do I try to act like, you know, there's nothing wrong? Like, do I say the pink elephant is in the room?
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that a right reference?
The pink elephant? No, I think pink elephant has to do with drinking, I think.
Does it?
I don't know. I think it's just elephant.
Elephant in the room. Elephant in the room. But it's a pink elephant in my story.
In your opinion, it's okay, that's fine. We can see pink elephants in the room. Okay. That's cool. ASD, or autism spectrum disorder, is what our son was clinically diagnosed with.
Yeah.
And we want to speak from a place of experience, not a place of expertise. Mm-hmm. And so we're not condemning or challenging people and saying, this is how you need to understand everything. We just want to share our story. And one of the things that we learned about ASD is that people that have autism spectrum disorder generally have difficulty with interactions, with communication with other people. They've got restricted interests, repetitive behavior. And they call it a spectrum because it's a wide, varied field. There's a lot of symptoms and different severity of symptoms depending on the child, depending on the person. And there's all sorts of factors that we don't even understand. And because we're people, we're always trying to find a cause for ASD or anything, really. We're always trying to point to, well, why?
Yeah.
Why did this happen? How can we fix it? But we don't really understand how or why autism is, but we know that it is. And so the ASD spectrum includes Asperger's syndrome, but it also includes kids with sensory processing disorders or kids who struggle with social and emotional processing. Isaiah, our son, he deals with a lot of the things listed, like eye contact, not listening, having trouble sharing, failing to respond when we're trying to get his attention.
Which we know all children struggle with that anyway.
And husbands and wives sometimes struggle with that. It's called
selective hearing.
That's right. Sometimes I blame my ASD on not listening to
your undiagnosed condition.
But Isaiah struggles with some of these things, and we started noticing these symptoms from a very early age. And so we decided that it'd probably be good if we want to explore resources that can help us in parenting. It would be good for us to get him tested, get him evaluated, and see if he actually fits the criteria to be diagnosed.
So we, because we parent differently than the world, and that's what we're called to be as believers, we have this different perspective because we view parenting as a calling and not just a job or just a task that we have to complete in 18 years. We view this as a lifelong commitment. And so we really wanted to give our children and our family the best foundation for parenting. And when we began to notice some of these things, and it's things that honestly, I don't think I had a list of like, this is the criteria for if a child has autism, but it was just things that I noticed, like Isaiah's doing this.
Yeah.
Or he's not. It was the eye contact was one of the biggest things. But yet he was so, there were some things he would really latch onto that I was like, yeah, but he's really good at this, but there's just weird. We're not connecting. And as a mother, I think us mamas notice those things more than maybe dads do.
Definitely. But, yeah.
Like he's not connecting. He's not saying I love you. Like he's saying it, but I just knew he wasn't really feeling it. I don't know if that sounds right, but it's like he's saying just it just because I'm saying it to him and I'm asking like, do you love mommy? And it was almost like this is like rote.
Yeah.
And it was very, even the pitch and the tone of his voice, it was like he could mimic tones and patterns very easily and memorize music very easily, but there were some things he just wasn't mastering. And so that kind of concerned me. And in my heart, I was like, okay, one day I might need to get this looked at.
Well, and I remember when you brought me those concerns, when you were talking to me, this was at our last pastorate, and you were telling me about, well, I don't know, I think we might need to get them checked. And growing up in African-American culture primarily, I mean, we don't talk about stuff, mental disorders especially.
Yeah.
I think there's an understanding that there's so much variety in people that we don't need anybody to tell us that somebody's different. They just need a little love.
they're just special.
Yeah, they're just special in a different way. I'm not going to go take my kid and get them all checked out. But really, I was kind of in denial about the whole thing.
Mm.
And I was like, no, he's fine. He's just developing a little different on the verbal spectrum. Like he needs a little more time to work on his words. I remember he spoke gibberish for a long time.
Yes, but he knew what he was saying.
Oh yeah.
Even though we didn't.
Yeah, no idea. Until it was time to sing. When he was singing, he would sing English.
Yes.
But when he was trying to communicate something, it was a lot of gibberish, even past the time where they say kids are supposed to speak gibberish.
Yeah.
But I was definitely in a bit of denial about it. I was like, I don't want that.
And I want to speak to that just a little bit, because it is so easy as believers, which in the church in general, we do not handle mental health very well.
We do not.
We do not handle psychological issues and cognitive, like all of these things wrapped up in ASD and other things. We don't handle them well because we have sometimes this like really staunch perspective of like, well, if you have enough faith and if you're following Jesus, then you should have health abundantly and you shouldn't have anything wrong with you, or you know, there's something wrong with you, and if I acknowledge this, that acknowledges maybe that I didn't have enough faith as a parent, or that I'm doing something wrong. And you know, if I'm supposed to be a holy person and all of a sudden my child has, and I just want to speak the truth over you,
no myth here
that those are lies from the enemy. It is not. Honestly, it does a disservice to our children when we don't acknowledge these areas of weakness and say, we need to look at that. Think of how much better we can set them up for success when we know the issue. And I've known parents, I know the fear and the reality of like, but if I acknowledge this and I put a name to it, then I'm succumbing to whatever comes with that. And I get that. But the other side of it is, if you know the challenge and you know that there is a community that can help you address it, then you can move forward with confidence and with more just endurance than you would have with the fear intact.
Well, and there's a thing I saw that said, it's okay to have Jesus and a therapist too. And it's, I just want to give you guys freedom out there. Like, it's okay to have Jesus and, need medical help or need psychological help or have Jesus and some sort of, neurological atypical diagnosis. It's not one or the other. Like, well, if you have enough Jesus, then clearly these wouldn't be issues.
Yeah. And even I think the wording of that, like, it's okay to need psychological help in the midst of being sanctified.
Amen.
Like the Jesus and caught me off guard. Like it's okay to seek medical help while also following Jesus.
Yes.
Sorry. Yes. Sorry, Pastor.
No, you're 100%. We're saying the same thing.
Yes.
I was saying that you don't have to pigeonhole yourself and say, well, I can't seek medical help.
Right.
Because I have Jesus. And if Jesus isn't enough to fix my health problems or my mental diagnosis, then then what?
Yeah. And the cool thing is there are so many health professionals available to us that are believers. If you have that perspective of like, well, I can't do this because this is a medical field and I'm all about Jesus and that's medical. Well, find a doctor who's a believer. Find someone who aligns with your worldview, who can still give you the care that you need and that your child needs.
Yeah, I serve a God who created medicine.
Right.
My God is God over science as well. Yes. And so science and God are not exclusive.
At odds. Yeah,
they're not at odds at all.
Yeah.
So that fear of the diagnosis, that fear of putting a name to it, that was, like I said, that was something I was dealing with.
Yeah.
And when the time came, because I remember you were trying to get an appointment locally.
Yeah.
And we live, you know, a long ways from any center that can do these diagnoses. And Kansas City is actually the closest one to us.
And it's 4 hours away.
Yes, it is definitely 4 hours away. Every bit of that 4 hours you feel while you're driving. But as we were trying to get scheduled, it was months in advance. It was like, you got to get that way out there.
Yeah.
And so it was this distant thing. But as the time started getting closer, our family went through a lot of tragedy in that time.
Yeah.
We lost my brother at that time. We also were dealing with issues in our ministry. We were dealing with personal attacks.
Yeah.
There was a ton of stuff happening at that time. And just so happened, it was like, oh, hey, we have to get this diagnosis as well because we've waited months for it and we can't reschedule now. And so I remember when we loaded up that morning and we drove to Kansas City. First off, we woke up late.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I don't remember what we were doing the night before, but we were up too late. And so
probably
going through some sort of stress, some mental issue we were dealing with.
Yeah.
But I remember waking up and like, okay, if we leave now, we'll only be an hour late if I speed on the highway.
Yeah.
And trying to call the doctor and being like, hey, we're running late.
Yeah. And we couldn't call them because when we had to leave, it was before it was open.
Yes.
So by the time we got to where they were open, we were already 2.5 hours into the trip.
Yeah.
And
we were about 3 hours away from home because we had just hit Topeka.
Yeah.
And finally they answered the phone because we'd been calling them. They pick up the phone and we're like, hey, we're running late. And they're like, oh, well, we'll just reschedule you. No, you won't. You will not reschedule me. We have been driving for 3 hours. Yeah. We are going to be there.
That was a moment of relying on grace with people, because I remember being on the phone and the tears. I was like, I'm not going to cry on the phone. It's going to be all right. I've cried a lot right now. And I just remember appealing to the young lady on the phone who was not one of the medical professionals. I just remember saying, listen, I know that you probably hear this a lot. I know you get excuses all the time. And I know that we were wrong. We should have been on the road already, but I am appealing to your kindness.
Yeah.
Is there any way you can go back and ask if they would be willing to make an exception and get us in? And we waited on the phone. It was probably only like a minute hold, but it felt like it was like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
And she came back and said, listen, we will get you in. When you get here, we'll do as much of the testing as we can. And you'll have to come back for another trip.
Yeah, because if you don't know, these tests for diagnosis are 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's like a 4-hour test.
Yeah, because they do a cognitive test. They do some psychological evaluation. They do a medical exam. And then they do like an hour long like breakdown with the parents. And so all of that takes time. And they have all these teams that assemble. So there was like 10 people involved in this diagnosis process.
They're supposed to go from step to step, but because they were working with us, they were all in the room at the same time.
Yeah.
Which was actually really cool because we got it done almost quicker. I kind of feel like we robbed the system, but that's just God's favor working on our side. But yeah, so we go for this test and there was only enough space in the room for one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kylie Jo went in the room. I was in this like little phone booth area with a two-way mirror. I felt like I was in the CIA and I was like, or the FBI, and I'm waiting for them to crack the case.
With Rebecca.
With our daughter who was less than a year. How old was she?
She was
I don't know.
Yeah,
she was a little.
Yeah.
Trying to keep her calm and entertained in that little bitty phone booth space. Mm-hmm. And for kids out there that don't know what a phone booth is, Google it. So if you don't know what a phone booth is, look it up. It's a small, anyway, you'll find it. We're in this little space and they're doing this test. And the whole time I'm like, well, that's normal. well, everything he's doing is fine. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but there's something they did to help monitor how the child deals with conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave Isaiah a toy.
Yep.
And then asked if they could share it. And then when Isaiah wanted it back, they wouldn't give it back.
Yep.
To see if he can monitor. And I remember getting so angry behind the glass.
Yeah.
Like, just give him the toy. Like, why would you take a toy from a child?
And at the same time, they're interviewing me because they're doing it all at the same time where they would have normally waited until the end. They're interviewing me and asking me all these questions about my medical history and all this stuff. And so I'm in the room and I can see it out of the corner of my eye. And they had told me at the beginning, hey, just so you know, anything you see where, like, if your child gets in distress, we're going to ask mom if you would please not try to intervene because we're testing.
Yeah.
And this will evaluate how we diagnose him. And it was so hard to be in that room and to know, like, okay, I know what I would do at home and what we've been doing.
Yeah.
But to know that I couldn't, I had no control. And this was, it's all for the benefit of figuring out, is this on the autism spectrum? Is that normal? Is that, and so it was very difficult.
Or atypical?
Is it typical or atypical? Yeah.
Yeah. It was high stress for the helicopter dad here because I was in there like, I'm ready to jump out there and be like, get off my son. Like, he wanted the sticker, give him the sticker. Like, why are you messing with him?
Right.
But it was good for me as well to be in that situation.
Yes.
And then I remember we left and they told us then actually that, yeah, they told us as we were leaving.
That's right.
They told us after a little bit of a break, we went and got some food in the cafeteria somewhere. Mm-hmm. Then we came back and they said, hey, your son is showing symptoms of being on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
Based on everything that we've observed, based on all the tests. And they even broke it down for us, like, do you see how your daughter's doing this?
Yeah.
You know, and she's younger than Isaiah. He's not even doing this.
Which was really hard for me because we adopted a culture in our family. We said, we're not going to compare our children. We don't want to always be thinking, well, this one's doing that. Was this one doing that?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I saw, like, it helped to illustrate the depth of the diagnosis of, like, okay, yeah, that is, and also was confirming, like, okay, I knew even before we had Rebecca, I knew there was just something that was not clicking with him.
Yeah.
And that was really hard though, because they were showing us, like, with our own kids, like, you see that, right?
Yeah.
You notice that, mom. And it was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I do. But it was almost, it was also kind of like, well, now what?
Yeah.
Now what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah. And we had to come back for a second appointment to do the medical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to drive all the way back to Plainville, which is a 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
And again, this was during a season. I think this was the week after Darren's funeral.
Yeah.
My brother Darren was murdered in Wichita.
Yeah.
Good Friday of 2018.
Right.
And we were dealing with all of that still.
Mm-hmm.
And as we got back in the car, I remember thinking through this whole thing. I was like, okay, no matter what happens, I got to be there to support Kylie Jo. And I got to be the rock, you know, I got to hold it together. But what I didn't realize is, you know, you had been processing this for months in your heart and dealing with this concept. Well, the whole time I'd been running from it. Like, it's not an issue. In my mind, I thought, we're going to show up. They're going to tell Kylie Jo everything's fine. You're overreacting. He's a normal kid. You know, he's a typical child.
Yeah.
And we're going to move on. But then when that hit, like, all of the weight of everything we'd been dealing with, and I just broke down.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, I'm supposed to be here for you and you're having to be here for me. And
it was
a humbling experience. It really was.
You know, what kind of something I remember that maybe, I don't know if you remember seeing it, when they brought us in at the end to say, like, hey, we want to talk to you guys about our findings.
Mm-hmm.
The entire team was there. It was like all of the women that had been working with Isaiah.
Yeah.
And to me, I was like, okay, wait, if there was nothing that they had to report, maybe they would just send one person to let us know, like, hey, go home. You guys are good.
Yeah.
But they had all of them there. And our wonderful nurse practitioner, Catherine, put a box of tissue on the
table. I did notice that.
And I remember, like, instantly I was like, there it is.
Yeah.
Like, they've been through this. They know what this is like. And they're about to give us news that they are sure is going to break our hearts.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, all right, there it is.
Yeah.
But,
well, and even then, I noticed it afterwards, but in the moment, I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
I was just like, let's get out of here. We got a 4-hour drive. I'm hungry. That little snack we got ain't enough. I need some more in my life. And so, I remember getting the diagnosis, driving home, and it was interesting because at that moment, all of my selfishness came out. Because in that moment, I was like, no, I don't want my son to have to deal with this. I don't want it.
Yeah.
And like, I had all these plans and all these things I wanted for Isaiah. And now some doctor's going to put some label on him. And now he can't have what I think is best for him.
Yeah.
And it all just showed my selfishness. It showed that at that moment, I wasn't worried about Isaiah. I was worried about how am I going to parent? How am I going to process? How am I going to... You know, me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Isaiah was completely unfazed.
Yeah, he didn't even care.
No, and part of the spectrum is that lack of empathy at times.
Yes.
And dad's in the front seat crying and snotting and looking all ugly and stuff. And Isaiah's in the back seat like, can we go? Like,
yeah, I'm hungry. I remember he was like, I'm hungry, mommy.
Yeah. And the whole time, like, it kind of snapped me back, realizing like, okay, this diagnosis didn't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
It just called something out that we needed to be aware of.
It shed light on something that we needed light shed on.
Yeah.
I remember before we left, I had reached out. I really didn't share a lot of this with our church family only because I'm in that place of like, I want to make sure that we get answers before I start, you know, freaking people out.
Yeah.
And we do have a member of our congregation whose their son was diagnosed with autism and with Asperger's actually.
Yeah.
And so I knew there would be compassion, but I shared it with our worship team at the time and just said, hey guys, we're going to go. And my heart is just in a place of I'm ready to accept it, but I need my church family.
Yeah.
I need somebody to tell me that it's okay.
Right.
And the response I got initially was not one of grace, but afterwards I was able to hear from the grandmother of the young man in our church who has Asperger's, and she just offered hope.
Yeah.
She said, hey, I just want you to know that my grandson is an incredibly intelligent, creative, gifted young man.
That's right.
And he functions in life and he has relationships and he has a family who loves him.
That's right.
And he knows that God loves him. Like nothing has stopped any of that.
Yeah.
And I needed that because hearing the initial thing, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm a terrible mother and how dare I open my child up to this? And why would I go and trust some doctor to just look at my kid and tell me all the things that are wrong with him? But all that to say, like, I needed to open myself up to the church.
Yeah.
In order to receive that.
Yeah.
I know that by sovereign grace, I needed to hear the rough part before I could hear the good part.
Yeah.
And that was so necessary for us. So even that was even before we went and got a diagnosis. So just as an encouragement, you know, if you're like me and you're like, I'm not going to say anything until I know for sure, you know what? It's okay to say something before you know for sure.
Yeah.
It's okay to go to another mom and say, you know, I'm concerned whether or not her child is on the spectrum. I'm concerned that I don't know. I need help. I need help processing this.
Part of the title of this episode is Yes, Our Son Has Autism. No, you don't need to apologize. I remember at the onset of getting this diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
me feeling like I needed
to apologize. Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm sorry, son, or, you know, like feeling like I did something wrong or feeling like there was something wrong in general.
Yeah.
Like there's an issue. There's something wrong here.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with Isaiah.
Right.
And what I think is interesting is most people that meet our son, when we, have to explain to him, like, hey, he doesn't get things the same you get them. Like he processes differently. And we tell him he's on the spectrum and they're like, really? But he's so smart. Because initially it's like anyone on the autism spectrum is just a big dummy. Like they don't have intelligence.
Right. Which isn't the case at
all. No, not the case at all. I remember I was carrying some of that, like, I'm sorry, son, I'm sorry. There's something wrong and I'm sorry.
Yeah. And, or even to other people like, I'm sorry. He doesn't understand. I'm sorry. Like, let me micromanage this interaction because he's not going to get it and you're not going to get it and you're going to get mad at him when that's not necessary.
No, that's not the case at all. And, one of the things, just for practical application, one of the things that I had to come to deal with is that his diagnosis wasn't about me. It wasn't about my role as a parent. It wasn't about my ability to manage. It wasn't about whatever dreams and goals I had. Like, I really want my son to be a rocket scientist. he may be a rocket scientist, but it's not about me. It's about whatever God is calling him to be. And it's about what God's glory, or how God's glory can shine in his life best.
Right. Well, and just along that confession, like for me, it was I had the battle of overemphasizing the things that Isaiah does well.
Yeah.
To almost atone for his weaknesses.
Yeah.
As a mother, like, okay, well, yeah, he doesn't emote well, and he doesn't quite understand this, but you know what he does do really well? And I certainly didn't want anyone thinking that I did something wrong in my parenting or in my pregnancy. I didn't want anyone to recognize his weaknesses and, weirdly enough, know that it makes him weak.
Yeah.
Because what would that say about me? Because of the identity issue of, like, well, as a parent, I'm doing pretty good. And if you're not doing well as a kid, then that must mean something's wrong with
me. That's right.
And God really convicted me about that, because we do that with our own sin. I know I've done that. Like, well, if I can just make sure you're looking over here and don't see all the mess that I got going on.
That's right.
I'm atoning for my own sin, which isn't what we're called to do.
Yeah.
Or we want to call it by another name.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have autism. He just, you know, doesn't relate well.
Yeah.
No, he has autism. He's on the autism spectrum. He has issues with social emotional connection. That is truth.
Yeah.
That is truth. And it does identify a weakness. But isn't that the heart of the gospel, is that we are weak,
mm-hmm.
that we need strength from someone greater than us. And for Isaiah, it's not us. It's not that he needs strength from his parents in order to be a functional human being, to be a typical functioning human being. He needs strength from beyond us.
That's right.
And really, it was so humbling to know that my child has weaknesses. I can't fix it by just wishing it would go away. I can't give him a pill. There's not a shot that's going to cure it. This is something that every single day of his life, for the foreseeable future, we are going to have to rely on the strength of God. We are going to have to rely on grace from others and from the Lord. And I will tell you, once I opened up my heart to that, it freed me from the burden of trying to carry my son in everything.
Yeah.
Of trying to fix every little emotional outburst that we had. Because I recognize, like, son, that's exactly how I am.
Yeah.
I will struggle to communicate. I will struggle to have empathy and compassion, sometimes by choice, not just because I'm made that way neurologically, but because, you know, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I think is about what you're saying that's really funny to me is, we were talking to one of our cousins, adult cousins, we were talking and sharing this truth that Isaiah is neurologically atypical. And the question was like, okay, I don't really know what that means. Can you explain it? We're like, oh yeah, he's got some issues communicating his emotions. He has some issues properly processing other people's emotions. And the response was, well, that sounds like everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody has that issue. And although that's true, like, yeah, we all struggle in that.
Yeah.
We had to, like, clarify, like, no, it's okay that his issues are a little bit more specific or a little bit more severe than everybody's. But the fact that he had that response was like, it wasn't like, I'm so sorry your son's that way. He's like, dude, your son is dealing with the same issues everybody else deals with.
Yeah.
I have issues communicating my feelings and showing emotions properly. And we had this thought, like, because we're always trying to find causes, maybe autism has always been around and we're just now getting this ability to call it out.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of this study that was done, you know, like, the color blue wasn't in any ancient writings. And so, like, the color blue is something that we didn't really have a word for for a long time. And it was identified at a certain point in history. But if you go back and read some of the earliest writings, you'll see all these colors mentioned, but you won't see blue.
Wow.
And they did this study on the Himba people. I think that's how you say it. And these people don't have a word for blue. And so what they did was they put 11 green squares and they put them in a circle, and they put one blue square in the circle as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked them to pick out which one's different. And because they didn't have a word for blue, they had a hard time picking out a different one because they saw them all as just shades of green.
Mm.
And so, you know, maybe because we never had a word for autism, because nowadays you get people that are a little more staunch, like my parents' age and my mm-hmm. grandparents' age, be like, well, there's nothing wrong with that boy. He's just a little different. There's nothing wrong with them. It's just, mm-hmm. it's because in their mindset, they don't see the difference.
Yeah.
And so trying to identify and being able to identify isn't a weakness in our society. It's not showing like, well, now kids nowadays are just terrible and their parents have messed them all up. It's saying, okay, hey, now we understand that there is something different
yeah.
about people that process in this way.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to give it a word. We used to call people surly, or we used to call them cold and distant, or, you know what, maybe they're just, they're a little off. Now we can process and be like, oh, actually they've got ASD. They're on the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah. And to recognize it, not just as a disorder. Cause one thing I had said, I was like, it's a disorder that isn't disorderly.
Yeah, that's good.
Like it's not a chaotic thing. I mean, for many, many people, it's simply a better way to understand the culture around them. Like
yeah.
to say, okay, so there are people who are on this spectrum. And for all of us, there's great benefit in learning more about it, the many different ways it manifests.
Yeah.
But it's not a disorderly thing. It's not this like, oh my gosh, everything has to change now.
Yeah.
There are certain areas that we have to adapt, just like we have always done as people. We have to adapt to the changes and the conditions that we're given. And so like just practically understanding that neurologically atypical people offer us the chance to practice grace and mercy every day, because
Amen.
How often are we like that? How often are we so focused on our own interests that we don't even think about the other person?
Yeah.
Our son does it every day. We have to constantly remind Isaiah, hey, buddy, I'm so glad that you want to talk about that, but can we talk about something else? Because
yeah.
he will spend an hour if you want to hear about, what's the new thing he likes? It's on Right Now Media.
I don't know.
I
kept messing up.
Kids.
Sea Kids. That's what I call it, like Jesus Fish or
yeah.
school church or
he
something like that.
He will talk an hour.
Sea Kids.
Talk your ear off about it because he's so fixated on it. And we do that. It may
yeah.
not be at the level that he does it, but we do that as well. We don't think about what the other person wants to talk about. So that gives us the chance to really practice grace and mercy.
Yeah.
Okay. So just for parenting, from a parenting perspective, we talked about the different ways that we understand our kids and on the spectrum, how they're different from us, how it can reflect on us as parents. Like, oh my goodness, well, if they're broken, what does that mean about me? If they're weak, what does that mean about me? But
yeah.
the Lord wants us to bring our brokenness to him.
That's right.
He doesn't just want our brokenness as spouses or as parents. He wants all of it. He wants us to completely surrender our children's weaknesses. No matter the cost, no matter how it looks to someone else, he wants to be the one to sanctify and redeem them. We can't be the ones to focus on that. You know, as Isaiah's mama, this last year has shown me that I'm not doing him any favors or showing him grace by refusing to accept the reality of his weaknesses or trying to cover those up by my own strength. I'm not doing
yeah.
him any favors. And I'll tell you the many ways that God has revealed just his power through Isaiah, things that I'm not exacting myself to or purposing myself to pour into him. Like I must get him to master this skill.
Yeah.
But I'm just bathing it in prayer and I'm asking the Holy Spirit, work in him. I know you can. I know you have the power. And I'll tell you, there have been so many times where Jesus convicts me through my son's mouth.
Amen.
Jesus says something like, hey, I got this boy. He hears it. He hears the truth. And I sometimes think, what if this weakness, and I think it's 1 Corinthians 1 talks about this. What if this weakness that God placed in Isaiah, sovereignly by his grace, placed in Isaiah's heart, what if this weakness is the very thing he's going to use to get his heart on fire for Jesus?
Yeah.
Because he takes things so literally.
Yes.
Because he doesn't understand some of the nuances. What if he gets so fixated on the gospel? And
yeah.
what if that's the only way he would do it? I sometimes wonder, what if that weak thing of the world is what God wants to use to put his fire in Isaiah's heart for the Lord?
Amen. Well, this is just a small taste
mm-hmm.
of this experience. And we want to hear from you, whatever your experience has been. Maybe you've been diagnosed. Maybe you're on the spectrum. Maybe you're an adult. And as you listen to this, you're like, wow, I have those issues.
Yeah.
I can't process, or yeah, I get stuck on certain things or whatever. We hope that this has been able to raise some awareness for you.
Yeah.
And know that just because someone's neurologically atypical or they process differently, you don't need to apologize for them. And
right,
they're not bad or wrong.
Right.
They're just different.
Yeah.
And it gives you an opportunity to extend the grace of God into someone else's life, and to learn maybe even a little bit more about yourself and how selfish you can be.
Yeah.
Speaking for myself in that. So we hope that this has equipped you. This has given you a little insight into who we are. And hopefully you've been blessed to know. If there's anything, any questions you have, please comment on social media. We'll respond. Send us a message. Send us an email.
Yeah.
We will get back with you.
Yeah, we want to talk more about this in the future.
Yes,
as definitely, we grow as parents, because this is just one season of our life. And so if you have anything to contribute to that, please contact us.
That's right.
So this has been the Nick Smith Podcast. We hope you've gotten a dose of real life.
No myth.
Be blessed.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Nick Smith Podcast. We are so glad that you joined us, and we hope that you'll consider subscribing so that you can tune in each week. Don't forget to rate and share this podcast. And if you haven't already, follow us on social media. If you want to be a part of our family's mission to entertain, educate, and empower others, please consider becoming one of our Patreon supporters. Exclusive Nick Smith merchandise is available to you through our online store at www.nicksmithpodcast.com.